Welcome to Think Like a CEO, a special series on the Elite Achievement Podcast. If you've ever been told to think like a CEO, but weren't sure what that actually means, this series is for you. We're going behind the scenes with real CEOs, leaders who have built 7- and 8-figure businesses to unpack the mindset shifts, leadership habits, and strategic decisions that fueled their growth. You're about to hear how real CEOs think so you can evolve your identity, elevate your leadership, and start making decisions like the CEO your business needs. In today's episode, I'm joined by Ashley Connell, founder and CEO of Prowess Project, a platform that connects CEOs with their ideal operations partners. Think of it like a strategic matchmaking service for visionaries who are finally ready to stop running the business alone and start building something scalable. If you've ever felt stuck doing everything yourself or unsure how to build the right kind of support around you, this conversation will help you rethink delegation, get clear on who you're looking for in an operations partner, and gain the freedom to focus on what matters most. Ashley breaks down the difference between being a visionary and an integrator, the revenue benchmarks where businesses tend to break, the role safety plays in effective delegation, and the biggest mistakes CEOs make when hiring their second in command. If you're the CEO still doing it all, this episode will inspire you to delegate with confidence and go all in on your vision. Get ready for another empowering conversation in our Think Like a CEO series. Welcome, Ashley.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Ashley, thank you for taking the time to come on the show and specifically to be a part of our Think Like a CEO series. I am so excited to feature your story and learn more about what thinking like a CEO means to you. But before we get there, I'm curious, what does achieving elite success mean to you personally and professionally?
Great question. What achieving elite success means to me, and I'm sure you get this all the time, but just the idea of freedom. Freedom in the amount of money so that I can feel comfortable and I can take care of my husband and my girls and my bulldog, but it's also freedom of time, of, you know, what does my schedule look like? What are the different activities that I am doing all day, every day, and making sure that it's the stuff that fires me up versus depletes me. Mm-hmm. And having that flexibility is worth its weight in gold.
Absolutely. I'm curious, what's some of the stuff that fires you up?
Love this question. The top thing that I love doing is bragging on my team. Mm. I love it. Love it, love it, love it. You would think I was a cheerleader in high school. I wasn't, but oh my gosh. And really the reason being is our COO is just fantastic and is an inspiration to our entire business, and we can go into that. But we really do attract just, we call them wizards because they can bend time. It's insane and get stuff done.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, we have to know more about this business. So tell us more about your business and the wizards that are bending time in your business.
Oh, I love it. So my business is called Prowess Project. What we do is we are a CEO and ops partner matchmaker. So this is a tech solution, think like match.com, mm-hmm. for the CEO and their right-hand operations hire. I believe that the compatibility for those two roles have to be spot on because they are truly the two that make the decisions and for the entire business. Mm-hmm. And they have to be that yin and yang in order to really scale.
Mm, I love that. So match.com for the CEO. That is wonderful. Okay. When did you start seeing yourself as the CEO of your business?
I started seeing myself as the CEO of my business when I had to start making really hard decisions. When I started out, it felt like playtime. right? Because you have this wild vision of, hey, what is this going to become? And you're online doing a bunch of research, or can this work out? And you're just chatting with people of, hey, does this resonate to you? Do these words versus these words? And it's just brainstorming. Mm. But then when you sign documents, government documents, legal documents, or you raise money and take money from other people in order to build out your vision, that's when I was like, all right, Ashley, let's get our big girl pants on. It's time. You know, let's go.
Did you have to make some mental shifts when you put your big girl pants on to step into that CEO role?
Yes and no. Okay. So yes, in the fact that there was no turning back. We are going all in on prowess. Like, this is where I want to spend the next 10 plus years of my life, is solving this problem. No, in the sense of I ran a marketing agency before prowess and made every mistake in the book and met the queen wizard herself, Leah, who was the inspiration for prowess. And so it felt familiar, but I have been learning nonstop since there.
Mm, I love that. So you were vision-led and you set out to solve a problem. How did you come up with this problem that you wanted your company to solve?
Kristen, it was a windy road.
It usually is, right?
Yeah. So I started Prowess because I wanted to solve my, at the time, future problem of how I was going to have kids and a career. I come from a tech background, and all the leadership were men. I would ask women who were at my same level, like, hey, going up for the next promotion? And they all told me no, because I cannot possibly work any more hours. I have kids at home. So hopped onto Google, found the Harvard Business Review statistic that 43% of women who are educated and in the professional world leave the workforce to raise children. When they return, after just 3 years, they lose 37% of their compensation power forever.
Wow.
But the light bulb moment was 97% of them would return if they had access to flexible jobs.
Flexible jobs being the key.
Yep. And I was like, holy smokes, how is this not a thing yet? So this was pre-COVID. And I set out to build a platform where caregivers could come on and find flexible work. Mm-hmm. What I then realized is the way to be successful for that was to raise a bunch of venture money. Mm-hmm. And it was a numbers game. How many people can I get on my platform? How many jobs can I get on my platform? And that's not really the business that I wanted to be in. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be in how many quality connections can I actually make? Meaning like job seeker and job. So in order to do that effectively, we had to niche down significantly. It couldn't be just any job that a mom, sandwich generation, caregiver for their parents could come in and find. It had to be specific ones. And that's when I realized that the fractional part-time operations partner, or you could call it an integrator, or really the person who is operating the business for the CEO, that is who we focus on.
Was that scary for you at the time to niche down?
Oh my God. Yes. I have a mentor. I wasn't eating. I wasn't sleeping. Like, I was so stressed out. I had a 9-month-old and I was like, okay, this is another do or die moment. Like, we're going to burn the boats and go all in on this. Let's make sure that we have the data to back this decision, that it's a good one. And it would be unreasonable for us to fail based on all of the data that we have gathered and all the conversations that we have had.
I love that. So it wasn't just a gut instinct you had. No. You actually had data. You were doing the market research, having the conversations, and that allowed you to borrow the confidence until you saw it working.
Borrow the confidence is the perfect way of putting it. Because yes. And so if anyone is ever considering niching down or making a big decision like this, I spent an entire month doing info interviews. So trying to get on the phone with 50 different people who I thought would be my target audience and just asked them questions. So these were CEOs who needed ops people. Ask them questions, what they wanted, what is not in the market, what is their biggest barriers to hiring a fractional ops person. And then took that list and built my offer based on everything they said they needed.
Awesome. I love that. Most people probably are not taking the time to do that level of research. They're thinking of the idea and running with it.
Chris, I tell everyone, info interviews, info interviews, info interviews, because probably 2 out of 5 times, they're like, oh, wait, are you going to offer this service? I could be very interested in this. Or I know my sister, brother's, you know, aunt, twice removes, whatever, could really use this. Tell me more, tell me more. And so then you have those early beta customers just by having those conversations of, what if I had a solution that could solve this problem for you?
Love that. Okay. So you come up with the solution. You're working with a lot of CEOs who tend to be doing everything themselves.
Yes.
How do you define the difference between this, what we'll call owner-operator role? So the CEO or the integrator or ops. And the bigger question, how does someone know when it's time to separate them?
Ooh, love it. Okay. So, if you have read the book Rocket Fuel, there is this idea that the two leaders in the business need to be, one, the visionary. So that is the person with the big ideas. Typically, they are the face of the business. They are relationship oriented. Mm-hmm. They are sales and marketing, typically. Mm-hmm. And they act on gut and feeling and inspiration. And I can say all those things because that is me. And then their right-hand partner is the integrator. This is the person who is making that dream, that vision that the visionary had happen. Mm. So they are building out all of the systems. They usually are responsible for all the tech stack. They are looking at the business and making sure it is running from the day-to-day and running the entire team. Mm-hmm. Having those two together are paramount in order to scale. The issue is many services businesses hire an operator too late. The operator being the integrator, being the ops partner. And so the visionary, whose brain doesn't think in systems and logic and numbers and timelines and project management, is doing that and doing it poorly. And they think, oh my gosh, the only way I can solve this is a $300,000 COO that I can't afford. Not the case anymore. Not the case. Mm. And so that was a problem we were trying to solve. And so now we offer fractional operations partners for these CEOs who, they're the bottleneck. They have the pipeline. They have the sales volume, but the back end of their business is completely breaking.
I'm smiling, Ashley, as you tell this story, because I feel like you're describing me, the visionary relationship, and you know, I kind of make decisions because I think it's going to work and yep. It feels good. And then my husband is all like, but it logically doesn't make sense and the numbers don't work. I'm like, well, we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. And I just had this conversation with my own coach, who thankfully my own coach thinks very logically. And so we partner really well together, but I can feel you on the visionary and acting on gut and feeling and inspiration.
Without a doubt. And my husband, too, is a logic and a numbers and all of that. And he doesn't understand me. I might as well be like from Venus, and he's really from Mars. And so I shared how different these two roles are. But there is one caveat. They have to be, they can't be so wildly extremes on those two ends. And that's where the compatibility is very important. Mm-hmm. And that's why we built out that match.com, because one size does not fit all when you're really finding those like leaders who are going hand in hand.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. So aside from the compatibility, what are some of the other mistakes that you have seen leaders make when they hire their number two or their operator or their ops partner?
Number one thing is they have not thought through delegation and what the CEO needs, what information or what validation they need in order to feel safe to delegate. Mm-hmm. And so I break this out into two different parts. First is, who does this person really need to be, this ops partner? Not just what traits do they need, but what behaviors can you visibly witness that is going to make you trust them to hand over pretty much the keys to the kingdom, mm-hmm. your business? Like, what are those behaviors? What do you need to see? People can say all day long that they have integrity, right? But what does integrity look like for you? So that's one. And then the other is pretty simple, but it's a onboarding plan. Let's start slow. Let's give one thing a week. And maybe the directive is, hey, ops partner, over-communicate with me. We're going to over-communicate until we both feel comfortable, until we both feel safe, until this is really like a gelling relationship.
Yeah, you've mentioned safe now a couple of times. Why is that safety so important when it comes to delegation?
Because you won't do it otherwise. If you don't feel like someone is going to actually take responsibility and ownership and be accountable for that responsibility or task or whatever it is that you are giving them, you won't do it. Mm. And then it boomerangs back to you. Mm-hmm. You give them, hey, go, you are in charge of all the financials now. And then it slowly, slowly, slowly falls right back on your desk because you don't feel safe giving it to them. But I can't tell you what safe looks like for you. And you can't tell me what safe looks like for me. And so that's why there's a lot of introspection that needs to happen in order to build out what that looks like.
Okay. So I can imagine if someone's sitting here thinking, okay, I need this. I need my secondhand person. But there's this work, this introspection that needs to happen for it to be right. How do you encourage someone to slow down and actually do this work so they get it right?
Yes, great question. With us or without us?
Well, I mean, of course, with you.
Well, with us, we have designed a whole process where we sit you down and we have questions that we designed with a behavior scientist, and it really gets clear on exactly what you are looking for in this ops partner. And so that's how we do it. As far as if you are doing this and you just want to start thinking about it, the first thing that I recommend is think back to people that you have worked with in the past, whether it's quote unquote professional work or not, and you really appreciated their behavior. You really appreciated their essence, just how they interacted with you, what they did on a regular basis, mm-hmm. and start jotting that down, because that's really, really important. It's really important. And so just start that list. All you gotta do is start.
Do you think that list works for other roles outside of the second in command as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think the second in command is most important, mm-hmm. because if you are going to step into the owner role, that operator second in command is going to run the entire business. And so it's less important, you know, those traits are slightly less important than the person you're going to be growing with, but still very much so important if you want to keep and maintain and grow a certain culture.
When you talk about stepping into that owner role, what does that allow a CEO to do?
This is what I hear. How about that? I hear this all the time from CEOs who have stepped into the role. It allows for space. It allows for freedom. It allows for relief that things are getting done. And they can finally do the activities in their business that are really in their zone of genius. Mm. So they're excited to get up every day because they're no longer in spreadsheets that don't make sense to them.
Yeah, makes so much sense. And is this critical for CEOs to scale their business?
Without a doubt. I don't know how you would do it without it. I really don't. Like, you have to think about your business. What is the external face, the owner, and what is the internal face? And that's the operator.
Makes so much sense. I remember when we had a chance to connect before we recorded this episode, you talked about your business breaking in order for it to rebuild. Can you share with us more about what you mean when businesses break and then how they rebuild and how does that help you scale?
Yes. So I will start with just the places where businesses break leading up to $1 million in revenue. So first is 250. And you're going to notice every reason is because of people and systems. At every one of these breaks, it's because you outgrow the bandwidth that you currently have and the systems that you do or do not have. So at 250, you're everything, right? You are the hand wash, or, you know, plate washer. You are the front of the house, the back of the house. You're the waiter. You are the chef, everything. So at 250, everything lives in your head. You need to bring in someone to get all of the things out of your head and into SOPs, ideally a tech stack to help you automate some of these things and start building those type of systems. But this is absolutely a fractional person, and you're still really the top dog. Then it gets to around 500. And that's when you can no longer do the sales and marketing and the delivery. So you need someone who is focused on fulfilling whatever it is you're selling. Typically, that's how that goes. And then at 750, that's when you need someone to manage the people who are doing the delivery. And your systems have broken because your systems were built at 250. So all your systems are broken. There's way too many people. The tech you've probably outgrown. And you need to rebuild that. And then $1 million and above, you have to have a ops person at least part-time who is really running your business for you.
Does it break again as you continue building on your way to multiple? It just keeps breaking these systems and processes and people.
Without a doubt. And a lot of it is like cash flow, like what you're able to pay people versus the level of talent that you need. So yeah, it would be great if at 250, you could afford a full-time COO to do all of this.
Sure.
But you can't.
Not yet.
You know? And then like, as you go up, sure, your top line, your revenue may be going up, but most likely so are your expenses. So you may get to a certain level and you're doing much more revenue, but your profit is half of what it is because you are rebuilding. And so it's a question that you have to ask yourself, like, am I willing to go through that pain of rebuilding or growth or whatever you want to call it you know, and to get to the next level? Or am I cool running a maintained business where I have a healthy profit margin and I'm not growing? And that is perfectly fine.
I am so grateful you just gave everyone listening the permission to run your business where you're at. Now, of course, the podcast is Elite Achievement. We're all a bunch of overachievers here, right? And and we're striving, striving, striving. But the question becomes, at what point have you, stroven is not a word, but at what point have you done enough striving to max out? And I think that that's sometimes hard for us as achievers to be like, look, I am stoked with what I built. I've got great revenue coming in. I love my business. I have a ton of freedom, but we hear messages nonstop. Do more, grow more, build more revenue.
Yes. That is literally the only word I have for you. Yes, that is right. We do. We hear those messages all the time. And I think it's nonsense. Like, don't get me wrong. I have massive aspirations for prowess. And there could be a time in my life, a stage in my life, phase, season, whatever, where I'm like, you know what? 3 million sounds really great right now. I like my team. I like my systems. I like my whatever. I'm feeling good. And then I may wake up and be like, no, to the moon. Who knows? But being able to give yourself permission, especially in different stages and seasons, I think is really powerful and quite frankly, responsible.
So good. So good. I feel like that is the perfect place for us to wrap up this conversation around thinking like a CEO from your perspective. And before we officially end the show, I love to ask, what habits or routines have been the most critical in your journey to elite achievement?
I listen to a ton of business podcasts. Not lost on me that I'm on a podcast now. I do, but my husband's like, oh, can you please get a hobby that isn't business? And I'm like, no, I can't. Like, yes, I need one, but like, I can't right now. If you are constantly learning about your business, about business, about all of these things that are making you money, again, I'm going to use this again. It is unreasonable that you are not going to succeed if you continue to learn and then act on it.
Yeah. I think the action part is key in what you just said right there. Yeah. And that's going to be the difference maker for so many of our listeners. And in our conversation today, there are so many things that people can start to act on. One, think about where you're at in business. Are you at that 250 mark, the $500,000 mark, the 750, the million, beyond? And take a look at your people and your systems. Are they going to get you to where it is that you want to go? Or is it time for you to document your SOPs or to find people to come in and deliver what you're selling? Or is it you need that integrator or that ops partner to help you grow to the next level? The other thing that you can do as a takeaway from today's episode is to think about what is going to make it safe for you to delegate. And so think about some of those individuals you've worked with in the past and what is it about their behavior or their actions that you have found really inspiring or helpful or attractive. And then you can use that to help find your next person that's going to help you grow your business to the next level. So Ashley, where is it that our listeners can go to learn more about you and the work that you are doing?
Yes. So come on over to prowessproject.com. And I am also on LinkedIn, Ashley Connell. You can learn about what we do, and we have a ton of resources just so you can get a better understanding of what could this look like for me. We also have our latest document. It is a top 15 big responsibilities that you can delegate to your ops partner. And in there, we have AI boosters. We didn't even talk about AI, which is a whole other thing that we could get into, but how important it is for your ops person to be very versed in AI moving forward.
I feel like AI is one of those tools. It's not going away. So if you haven't figured out how to start embracing it, now is your time to do it.
Yep.
Yes. All right. Well, we will definitely add the link to our show notes so our listeners can go ahead and grab that list of the 15 responsibilities. And Ashley, thank you so much for your time today.
No, Kristen, seriously, thank you. This has been so fun. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
It has. It's been a lot of fun. Until next time, Elite Achievers, celebrate your wins, reflect on your lessons, and consistently show up with the mindset and habits that will elevate your success. Remember, progress is made one step at a time. By listening to today's episode, you've taken an important step toward achieving remarkable results. If you're ready to continue your journey, visit my website, kristenburke.com, for resources, tools, and strategies designed to help you experience elite achievement. Subscribe now so you never miss an episode, and let's keep embracing the mindset, effort, and values that drive consistent elite performance. Thank you for listening.